If you edit the shit
out, I'm not going to do the editing.
I'm not going to let you end it until I say that if you edit my parts, you edit out a big part of mine in the first episode, and I remember it still. So if I listen to this, at least 3/4 of my lines aren't in it.
Shut the fuck up.
I'll never be in a podcast again.
Hi, you're listening to Misadventures. This is Chapter 5, Volume 1. You'll notice a little difference from the past chapters. We have Volume 1 because in this case, we're going to be covering Blue John Canyon. Now, Blue John was a really long-term project for Jesus and I. It was really the original thing that inspired us to start canyoneering. With that in mind, it also took us the longest to complete. So here I have Jesus Navarro, my co-host.
And we have a special visitor from California, although he's on the phone.
Hi, my name's Carlos.
And then we also have a few others looking around who are going to ask us questions, maybe insert comments. I think primarily that's going to be Cameron here, who you might remember from Chapter 1.
Yeah, I was in Chapter 1, and they said, Cameron, the podcast is lame. You need to come back, make it good again.
Not really.
But... So I'm here. I'm here to save it.
Right. Anything else, Cameron, before we keep going?
Yeah, I want to start with an intro question just to get us, like, conversational. I mean, we all are, but Carlos is coming in pretty fresh. We've been drinking together, so it's conversational. But Carlos, he's not been drinking. I don't know. I don't assume. But before we started this, we watched a video of, like, you guys doing Blue John. And that got me thinking, like, sand, like, orange stuff. So, like, and this is a simple intro question to get to know you guys. What do you think about Middle East peace? Like, how are we going to solve... How are we going to solve this problem? Okay,
hold on. None of us are Jared Kushner.
That's the...
Since Trump is my boss, that's really good.
So you have insider information.
Exactly. He's literally told me how we're going to do it.
So let us sit, like, your name is anonymous.
All right. No, but as you might have guessed, his solution is to kill them all.
It works. It's controversial.
Hey, Seuss.
I guess, how can you explain it doesn't work?
That's up to you.
Yeah, you need to give your own theory. How are we going to do
how
it?
Are we gonna
think
fix,
about the
how
sand.
How are we
going
to fix these problems?
Yeah.
You know what? Oil is very important.
Good start.
I think that, first of all, we do need to cover the priority here is we need oil.
That's true. We do. We are reliant.
How is this the priority?
All right. So, I mean, we do have a Marine here that he has spent most of his time fighting wars and trying to get our oil, right? So
Carlos, I had this question planned long before they called you. It just works out great. Carlos, I think you're brainwashed by the military.
So Jesus, how do we do it?
How do you fix? Do you just take all the oil out? We don't need to go there anymore.
Okay, World War III.
All right, I'm in. You sold me.
It's huge profit. I mean, look at history here. You have World War I, World War II. I mean, definitely. What was?
I mean, America came out on top both times.
Exactly.
So I think we should go for round 3.
Yeah, the Trump plan is to make it a hat trick. So.
That's right. Yeah. He knows what he's doing.
Carlos is more into the internet department and the military, aside from killing people, of course.
He kills people online.
So he knows a little bit more about how to virtually attack them as well.
All right, Dylan, we're waiting on your answer. What's the solution?
Okay, so I'm going to start with a two-state solution.
That's like, that doesn't lead to like massive death.
Short-term is long-term.
I'm going to derail this podcast.
You're the most sober.
I'm not. I don't know.
I'm going to take it.
Carlos might be.
So here we go. We're going to go ahead and get right into Chapter 5. So Chapter 5 is going to deal with our longest ordeal, which is Blue John, which is what ultimately inspired us. And it had to do with Aaron Ralston's particular predicament within Blue John. So Aaron Ralston was a very accomplished mountaineer. He's from Colorado. He spent a lot of time doing all the 14ers, that means any peak above 14,000 feet, in winter. And he did them all solo. So this is a guy who's experienced. Some would call him reckless even by this particular measurement, considering that he did them solo.
He actually was also part of the search and rescue in Colorado, too. So
right,
I mean, he's
right.
Definitely
you guys are
top-notch guy.
You're sounding pretty nerdy.
So he knew what he was doing here. He knew what he was getting into. Blue John for him was just a weekend out. He was just getting away for a weekend, trying to have a good time. And in Blue John, he encountered a chalk stone. And a chalk stone in a slot canyon is a stone that basically spans the length of the slot, but it gets stuck in there. I honestly will admit, I don't know if it's called a choke stone or chalk stone, because I've heard it chokes off the canyon.
Choke sounds way better.
Yeah, but it looks like chalk stone when you look at it in writing. So I've always called it a chalk stone because I've read it a lot, because I read books, because that's me as a person.
Oh, isn't intellectual.
I can't read, so this is offensive.
But this story in particular, yes, he was a very experienced mountaineer and a very, very active person. However, this story may be more relatable to many as 127 Hours with James Franco.
He lost his fucking arm!
James Franco.
No, he cut it off for the acting process.
He did not.
He's a celebrity. He replaced it for free.
No, he mentioned with a lot of money. He mentioned it in other movies.
He teaches at NYU, and he's a pretty bad professor.
Because he paid his way to the top.
Yeah, it happens.
Money does not
substitute
experience.
So Aaron Ralston, he gets his arm cut under this chalk stone in Blue John, which is a pretty easy canyon by comparison of his ability. And he's caught there for several days. Eventually, he gets desperate. He self-amputates. He rappels out, he gets down and out, and it's made into a major motion picture. It goes widespread. With how widespread it is, it eventually hits Jesus and I. So we've mentioned in all the previous chapters that we're dumbasses. We've looked at Bear Grylls, we've looked at all these TV shows, and these are what have got us into going outside, what have got us into canyoneering. And because of this, we've gotten ourselves into this situation. So this movie does the exact same thing. And we decide that this is a canyon easy enough that we can do. It's just a guy who got himself into a bad situation.
In fact, this is where I should interject and say, Jesus and Dylan both have one arm. It's for context. They didn't lose them on the hike. They just cut them up before.
Dylan and I were very inspired by this Aaron Ralston guy. We actually even read his book. Now, as I mentioned in chapter one, back when we were 18, we were attempting to get to this canyon with a group of friends, and we didn't make it. And then on the second time, we made it into the canyon, but we were not sure how to proceed. And then on this third try, it was with Carlos, and when we finally successfully completed the canyon,
right.
Except that we were not really prepared of what was to come. Because, I mean, we read the book, but it didn't really give us an exact...
It's those book smarts.
Yeah, yeah.
They don't translate to canyon smarts.
And Carlos, do you remember when we hit you up for this? Because I don't remember the conversation. I think we might have even been living together at the time. But do you remember?
I don't... No, I think we were living together at the time.
Yeah.
That's basically how I got involved in it. Because we had gone rappelling, our first time rappelling earlier, not too long before that, up in Cottonwood Canyon, I think.
It was actually Cache.
Cache. Yeah, we drove a weird amount of distance out for it. It was unnecessary,
yeah.
But we did it.
So we did that, right? And then you guys started doing research on Blue John and getting more into it. And then we were living together, so that's how I...
And when he says we, he meant Steelin, by the way, because I don't do the research, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. Me, Carlos and I were roommates. So, and I mean, too, you have to think, like, who are you going to bring? You need to bring someone who's fit. You need to bring someone who has the kind of attitude that they'll be able to get through. So that was Carlos.
I don't know why they didn't call me.
They were
playing. I don't know why you're laughing. Not a joke.
I don't know how to get through this segment.
I just don't know what to say about that.
I mean, I have some dumbbells. So I think I was ready for it.
Carlos, at the time, he was not in the Marines. Yeah, we invited him, and we, of course, needed to, all of us, learn how to rappel. And this is, as I mentioned, I believe, in chapter one.
Yeah, we mentioned in chapter one. It had to do... Like, we all learned to repel at the exact same time. None of us knew what the fuck we were doing.
You did your research. I just looked at a YouTube video of how to make a harness.
So we went out to cash, and we just went for it, and we all did it. We all survived. The next day, actually, Carlos and I went to a concert, but that's... Anyway, we did it just fine.
No, tell us more.
We saw the early November, and that was cool.
Yeah, I told you I was going to derail this.
Jesus and I have been out in that general area a few times in the past, trying to check it out, trying to see what we could do there without ropes, without certain skills. And we realize we need these skills, we need these people, we need these ropes. So we get the party together that we think we need to get it done.
This is like the Avengers moment.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
They're both the Nick Fury.
No.
Gathering the team.
I want to be Captain America.
Oh, yeah, Iron Man.
That's me. I'm Captain America.
Carlos can be the Winter Soldier.
He's Russian.
he's American.
But he's Russian brainwashed. It's the same thing.
This is not an Avengers podcast. So we eventually get everything together that we believe we need. And we head on our way out to southern Utah. So Blue John Canyon is located in, I believe, a robber's roost is what they call it, just because during Prohibition, it's where a lot of famous outlaws in the West ran their horses and did things like that. I don't know what else
Repelled.
To add.
Yeah. They'd have gallons of whiskey on their back and they would just
basically
fall down the mountain.
John was a cowboy.
He was a chef.
Those
are different things. Is he a cowboy or is he a chef?
You can be a cowboy chef.
You can't.
Actually, yes, you can. No. It was like, it's all about being a cowboy back then. Haven't you seen the Hateful Eight?
I watched it with you, I think, in the theater.
Yeah, I think so. Anyhow.
So we get down there, and we've already, at that point, Jesus and I have been down there probably twice. We've already established a camp, which is very nice, because this area, it's kind of in the middle of the nowhere. The few times we've done it, we've seen very few people. In actual Blue John, we've seen no one.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
You said you've been down there a couple of times to establish a camp.
Yeah.
So you went down there and you just camped? You didn't, like, do the camp? Like, what is that?
Well, we camped and we explored the canyon, but the parts that didn't involve ropes,
You went as far as you could, basically?
Yeah, with the little ability we had. And we didn't overdo it, which I think is maybe a benefit to us.
I think it had to do with Zion's near-death experience, and we didn't want to get ourselves in that situation again.
Yeah. So we had an established camp area, so we were able to set up camp there. Carlos, anything you remember from, like, the beginning of the canyon, what stuck out to you while we were there?
Everything started off normal enough.
Can you talk about your gear and your clothing and all? Because I feel like you were wearing like tennis shoes or something.
Maybe. I mean, I was wearing running shoes and gym shorts and then a tank top.
The necessities. Yeah.
So, the bare necessities.
I mean, it was summer, so it was hot, so that's what I wore.
Yeah, it was hot as shit. That's actually one thing to think of as we're leaving in the morning. It is very hot. You know, maybe we're leaving at 9 in the morning and it's 80 plus. So in the middle of the day, it's 190 plus. The temperatures varied very wildly.
Let's go ahead and talk about what we're doing in the camping session. Dylan and I have a certain ritual. So Dylan mentioned we have this little camping spot that we made actually because we actually camped there in that same fire pit area every time we went there. So there's this thing called Ralston Route. This is Aaron Ralston's strategy of completing his Blue John trip, and this is the best way to do it. So the way to describe it is you have one entrance point, one exit point. The entrance is from Little Blue John, and the exit point is from Horseshoe Canyon. Now, I would recommend visualizing a V. Little Blue John will be on the left side of the V, on the left corner, and Horseshoe Canyon will be on the right corner of the V. So it's not necessarily a loop. So when you're driving towards the terrain, you see this sign that is big. It just talks about the Ralston incident, talks about the helicopter rescue and Price and everything, and it forks up. So that's your V shape. On the left side, if you go towards the left, you're going to camp in the Horseshoe Canyon entrance. And if you go towards the right side, then you would camp where the little blue gen starts. So,
foreshadowing, that's what this is called.
So the Ralston route is basically, you have to have a shuttle for this trip, which we didn't think about.
What did you have to have?
Shuttle.
Like the end point to the beginning.
Yeah. So once you finish it, you want a shuttle to take you from the end to where you start.
So basically, you want two cars when you go down.
Basically, yeah. Essentially,
we didn't do that though. Why would you drive that far with two cars?
The Ralston route would be biking, however. So you would camp in one place, you would drive to your camping spot, and then you would bike there, or vice versa. You can leave your car there and then bike to your camping spot. It is necessary.
Wait, so you guys did
for the Ralston route. Not in this trip.
Just listen. Yeah. This will be very nice.
Yeah.
So they did not have bikes.
So we did not. Yeah, when Carlos, Dylan, and...
Carlos is very...
chimes in with the, fuck no, we did not have bikes.
So we just had my sister's Jeep, and we did not think about this, actually. So what we did is we just went to point... A, which is Little Blue John, and we just...
A camping spot.
Yeah, in a way, yeah, it was our camping spot. I'm not sure why we were not thinking about camping spot B, which is the exit of the canyon or Horseshoe Canyon, in which we would have to...
It's because we already established one.
I'm not sure what happened there.
How many tents does a person have, you know? You don't want to set up two.
Exactly. So we decided to just take one car, one shuttle, and we would just do the canyon. So we just have a beautiful night. We drink water. We eat beautiful dinner.
What was the dinner?
I believe it was our...
I don't like this beautiful...
Yeah, I want to visualize.
It feels very Trumpian.
We cooked
tremendous.
On a flat rock.
Oh.
You cooked on a flat rock.
So it was pretty interesting because we didn't have any seasonings or anything. So basically the seasonings for the food, like when you eat it, you could still feel little bits of dirt and
on
the steak. So basically that's what our seasoning
You became
was.
One
dirt.
With the canyon.
Yeah. Think about a skirt steak, and it's thin as shit, and we're just putting it on some hot rocks in the fire.
Yep, that was our...
It cooked pretty well.
Yeah.
Honestly,
yeah.
It doesn't sound bad.
It tastes good, yeah.
It's nice.
So we just said go to bed. I don't think there was any funny business that night.
I think that night, because we had never done... this was the first time we were truly prepared to rappel. So we had the rope and all the gear, so I think that maybe made us a little nervous, especially having seen the movie before with the big drop rappel. We hadn't rappelled anything that big before or free hanging. So I think with that in mind, we basically had just eaten and passed out because we were not going to fuck around when we had that the next day.
I can't think of a better way to prepare, be prepared for a canyon. And watching a movie where a guy cuts off his own arm to get through it.
We literally watched it the night before.
I mean, you're not going to take any chances when you watch that and then you go into that same camp.
I'm watching that again this coming Thursday before we do Red Bricks.
There's something about watching movies.
I think we should all actually get together and watch it.
I've never seen it.
What?
Okay, we're doing it this weekend.
it is the weekend right
this
now.
This coming... We have shit to do. Well, actually, no.
Next weekend is the time, so.
Yeah, I have work. We can do whatever we want.
Anyway, we wake up fairly early, and we, at this time, I believe, we had my GPS. I bought a GPS, so I was very confident. And
who is the maker of this GPS?
Garmin.
Oh, this podcast.
Hey, Garmin has helped us through so many issues. Garmin. Every time we get lost, Garmin. When we don't know where to go, Garmin.
Garmin.
If we're going to die alone, Garmin. What watch did I buy a week ago? Garmin.
A better way to navigate.
Garmin.
Oh! We're going to get sponsored. I can feel it in my bones.
The only reason that they're making this podcast is to make money off of it.
Yeah.
They don't care about the subject matter.
Garmin.
Navigational equipment.
Anyway, so we entered Little Blue John and we see this skull. Like, just skull in a rock.
Of what?
Of a cow, I think.
Okay.
I don't know.
That's important. I didn't know if it was a human skull, you might want to leave it alone.
That's some decent horns.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. Here we begin. I don't know, Carlos, can you go over the beginning of the trail?
Because Dylan's not by the computer anymore.
He's fine.
The beginning of the trail started off pretty normal. There was nothing crazy about it. I mean, we didn't get to the slot for a little bit. We did quite a bit of walking. It was pretty early in the morning, so it wasn't bad.
Honestly,
yeah,
that's
exhausting. It was a lot of walking before we actually got into the slot canyon itself. I do remember that.
The sand itself was not merciful in our feet. It was just, again, 100 degrees. We were prepared with water. We had food, some fats, like a summer sausage is our ritual on hiking here.
Oh, God, the summer sausage. So this is going to come back later. Let's remember we had a summer sausage among other snacks.
Yeah.
The summer sausage was like a luxury, so we'd break it out like once and then say, okay, let's save it for later.
They're going to get real freaky with the summer sausage, is what they're saying.
No, let's emphasize that the hike itself, the canyoneering part, is probably about 13 miles.
It's about, I think it's in the ballpark
like
of 11, 12. Yeah, 11, 12 miles total between the two canyons.
So we had to hike and go through this technical slot canyon for 12 miles, and we had a nice head start. I mean, of course, we had a GPS, but we were still kind of like trying to make good decisions, because in Little Blue John there's so many trails like kind of divide sideways, so it was kind of tough to determine where we would go. And when it comes to this canyon itself, it's not just an easy straight shot. Even with a GPS, you have to see where the GPS is taking you, if you're following the right path or not. And then, of course, because it is a slot canyon, there's a lot of technical, like, stemming, jumping, and, like, assessing how to navigate through this.
It's true, yeah. If you wanna take a drink of that, I'll continue. Because I'm generally in control of the GPS. Throughout that portion, he's right. When you get through an initial slot, You first drop into the slot and you're psyched. You're like, okay, I'm into Blue John. I see what's going on. I know what's happening. We're in here. We know what to do. And you even do a rappel into there. But after that first rappel, you're not in there. There's a lot of different twists and turns when you get into a riverbed. And actually, we got lost there. Our first time into the actual Blue John area, we ended up in a weird slot. Like, we're very lucky we made it out. I don't understand how it happened, but we got out.
We've all been there where you're in a deep crevice. You don't know how to get out. You don't know what you're doing. It takes work, and it takes a lot of guesswork. And then eventually you pull it off at some point.
Cameron is talking about a recent experience.
I'm talking about canyoneering.
That's somewhat true. But
like, if I didn't have Jesus and Dylan on my last trip, I would have been lost in that crevice.
And that's funny
days,
to think about.
You know?
We all enjoy thinking about that. That's fun. That's funny.
It's hilarious.
But anyway, we get in there with Carlos, and this time we have a fucking GPS. That makes it relatively easier. We're able to find the general direction of our path, and it eventually pays off. So you go into an initial slot where you're doing a little bit. You do one rappel, you do a little bit of stemming, but you get out, and it's wide, and there's all these twists and turns. But then you get to the actual slot. Once you get into the actual slot, you start seeing things that are very familiar, especially if you've seen the movie that we talked about earlier.
It's just super tight in there, you know? You gotta work your way through.
You start seeing things like the infamous S-log, which is this log.
Yeah, I've seen that. I swear to God. We've all been there.
It's basically petrified, and it's up at the top of the slot canyon. You have to use it to climb down maybe 10, 15 feet.
That's a bit deeper than I'm used to. But
Carlos, do you remember getting to that point when we actually hit the canyon?
Yes. The one thing that I do remember was that I took my backpack off to climb down. Well, actually, no. I took the backpack off. Right, and then I just threw it down.
Yeah.
And then I climbed down, and then I noticed that my backpack was really wet.
Carlos, I've done the same.
Water bottle that I had in my backpack held broken open. So there was, I think, maybe one or two water bottles left that were not damaged. That's another thing that ends up biting us in the ass a little bit.
It's true. This was a problem with Blue John. We planned ahead. We tried so hard. We fucked up so much in the past, and we're like, hey, we're going to bring all these water bottles. We're never going to run out of water. We're going to live forever. We're halfway through the canyon.
It's a big jump.
and not only just Carlos's, but in all of our bags, we at least had one or two that had broken. We had like 7 or 8 water bottles each in every bag because we wanted to be very cautious. And we were throwing down bags. We were squeezing between rocks. We just never thought about it. Like, this is stupid as shit, but you're just trying to get around a rock.
I mean, this is something to recall from this. It's the chapter one. It was like our...
Which is the chapter I was in.
Yeah, no.
It was, yeah.
Oh, yeah, like it's a like audience. But
I was involved.
Chapter one was definitely like a learning experience. So, Blue John, this is this trip. We're actually going back in time. This is not too much after Zion's National Park.
You travel back in time.
Yeah. So this is like one of our rookies because our gear itself. I mean, we now have like metal water bottles and everything. We don't.
Damn, upgraded.
Yeah.
I mean, a couple, but they're mostly plastic. That's why we fucked up.
Yeah, no, and our gear itself, it was not very, like, we were just still very naive about the situation. And yes, we were not careful about the whole tossing the backpacks thing, and that did end up biting us in the ass later on. However, once you get off the S-log, that's when you know you're in the right path. That's our main thing. It's like, it's in the movie, this is the trail we're in. Because before that, there was a lot of doubt. There was a lot of, are we here? Did we mess up? Where are we supposed to go? But the S-log was our guide. We went through that little slot, and then that's when things got fun. You just keep going down and down, and it gets really dark and cold, and it was very dry. There were some huge boulders, like, between the slot canyon. Like, it was just really tight. You have to go up or down, and so it was kind of fun just to kind of figure out how to get through them. And we finally found that Ralston Stone.
And in the slots, it's generally like really fun finding all the different obstacles, how to get over them. Carlos, what do you remember about being like in the actual slots?
So it's like going, like Jesus mentioned, going down there and going further into the slot was just really cool because it all of a sudden just became like really just quiet because you couldn't really hear anything. It also became a lot cooler, which was nice, considering we could just walk 11, 12 miles in the sun, basically. That was nice. Very cool, very shady. Couldn't really hear anything because all the sound was just not there at all. The only thing you could hear were just us like rustling through the slot canyon. For the most part, other than it being really tight, obviously you've only got one way to go. Yeah, and then when we did end up finding the boulder and the blood stain where the incident happened, that was pretty cool.
So was there any like any doubt or anything in your mind that you were not like you were thinking while going through this? Like,
we have no map.
Insecurity.
So at this point, it's still like, all right, we did the hike. We're in the Slot Canyon now. What I'm thinking is the only thing left to do the rappel, do the drop at the end, and we're home free. We're good. Completely wrong. That is not how any of it happened. But once we did get to the drop, Jesus made the harness with his rope tying skills. We all did the rappel with relative ease, considering we had only rappelled once another time.
Were you nervous at all?
No. I mean, it was, again, pretty easy. Maybe at the top before you, like,
this arrogant fuck.
Brag about it, bro.
Like when you're first leaning on the ledge, that part's probably a little scary. But once you start going down, it gets a lot easier.
I can relate to this. I did my first rappel last week.
Yeah, we taught him literally days ago.
Honestly.
Into a 70-foot rebound.
Not a big deal. You
know? Way to be late to the party there, Cameron.
I lived a sheltered existence most of my life.
Okay, fucking white guy.
You're really offending me.
Yeah, I can tell by the color of your skin.
Sorry, fucking.
Honestly, I'm the most depressed of anyone here.
Okay, so Carlos, I think he gives a pretty good description. Throughout the Slot Canyon, it's pretty chill. I mean, there's some pretty fun things where you're, you know, eking around different sides. You don't really know what's going to come next. It's pretty narrow, but for the most part, it's pretty chill. You're just going up and down a few boulders, regardless of how narrow it is. It's just really fun. And then suddenly you walk out of this very dark slot canyon that you've been in for maybe 20 minutes, and you see a little bit of light at the end. You walk out, and you're in a giant ass, like, compared to the slot, you're in a very giant canyon that's maybe 400-500 feet across. And you're 90 feet up or so. And you look down, and it's incredible when you've been in the slot for that long. And you have to rappel down. But again, Carlos, he laid it pretty low. But if you're doing a rappel for the second time, it's a little bit nerve-wracking.
Not for me, dude.
You have to learn to trust the gear pretty soon, considering that you're setting up rappels into bolts. Bolts are solid, though. Webbing solid. We're all able to rappel down.
You just have to accept death.
Yeah, that's...
If you're fine with dying, it's, like, not a big deal.
That's very true.
So I got through it so easy.
Okay, I guess this will get dark.
Yeah, we're gonna transition halfway through to a mental health podcast.
So we all get down, and we see everything. We did the big drop, like in the movie. We're very impressed because we thought, oh man, the movie ended like 10 minutes after this. We see the pool that he drank from. We're like, oh man, we're at the end of the film. But the end of real life is not the same as the end of the film.
What?
So we get to the bottom and we're in this big ass canyon. And we realize, okay, we need to get out, but that's fine. This is normal canyon that people hike. We just have to walk out. Jesus, what do you think about just walking out of Horseshoe?
Once all of us three are ready to rock and roll and exit the canyon, as Dylan mentioned, is. Alright, this is kind of where he got rescued. Let's go ahead and do this. How far can it be? We just walk and walk and walk, and the sand is just destroying our feet, like slowing us down. It's super hot, and we're just walking curve after curve.
I remember checking the GPS, because the GPS goes by the crow, but I'm looking to how far it is until we get up on top of the canyon. And it's like 4 miles. Okay, we still have a while. 4 miles isn't too bad. 3.5. Okay. And then I see it go up to like 3.55. And thinking, what the fuck? Because like it's snaking around. And I never know how long it's going to take because the GPS keeps changing distances.
At this point, I'm mad at Dylan because he's like, where? When are we going to get to camp? And when are we going to, like, what's going on here? And Dylan mentioned a key point, up.
Yeah.
Going up the canyon. I'd never crossed my mind. I just never realized what we were going to go through. And we just kept walking. We had bottles of water, very little water. I actually remember picking up, because we were walking along a little stream of water that looked pretty bad, but you know, I was like, you know, from Zion, I'm gonna play it safe and I'm gonna pick up some of this water and I'm gonna carry it just to be safe. We still have water, but I just wanted to be safe. We had it like a half the summer sausage. I think that was our only food left, and we were like pretty beat. I mean, we were carrying pretty heavy bags. We were walking and walking, and until we finally saw the exit/entrance of the Horseshoe Canyon. What do you think, Carlos?
Carlos, do you remember going straight up from out of the canyon?
I do remember that because because when we finally got to the top, the view was, it was pretty cool. I got some pretty nice pictures that I still have somewhere. However, at this point, we had been up for hours and hours because we got up really early.
Yeah, 7 a.m. actually. 7 a.m.
And by the time we finally, because like Dylan said it, the path just kept winding back and forth up the canyon, so the GPS couldn't really tell us an accurate distance of how long we still had to go. When we finally got up and out of the canyon, this is where like some of the worry started to set, and where some pretty unfortunate things had dawned on us that we did not plan for properly, and it was also, the sun was going down. Like we were losing daylight pretty quickly by the time we finally got out of the spot canyon, or the canyon itself.
Let me give you a little bit of a time frame here. So that we woke up, we started the trail at 7 a.m. We exit the Horseshoe Canyon, and again, this was draining. We were carrying heavy bags, and this is going uphill. And let me tell you this, it was no easy task to find a trail because, again, it was getting dark. And it was not sand, which means that there was no footprints. We were just kind of looking at rocks and like, is this natural rock formation or not? And so that took us a while to kind of find the trail. And when we got up to the entrance of Horseshoe Canyon, it was around 7:30 p.m. So we've been in this canyon for 12 hours. And that's when the fun begins.
And the sun starts going down. As we're going up and getting out of the canyon, we can see the sun setting. This makes for some really pretty pictures, but not a fantastic exit. And as we exit the canyon, we realize, like, we are at the end of the canyon, but we are not at our campsite. We are not anywhere near the Jeep. We're not anywhere near our tents. This is supposedly the end, but we're not near anything that we have. So how is this the fucking end?
So it was supposed to be a loop.
Yes.
That's what we thought.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
I mean, it is a loop, but it's a very long loop. We get up to the top, and we realize we have to walk back to our camp spot. We should have been prepared in some shape or form at this point. The Ralston route, if you watch the movie, he has a bike. And we'll go over that in the future, but generally, if you're going to do the entire loop, you have to have a bike at one point or the other to be able to do the entire thing. So we get up there, we've been canyoneering for 12 hours, we're dead, and we just realize we have to walk to our campsite. It's not any walk, this is a walk through sand. This is a walk over a trail, because if we go off the trail, we don't know if we're going to encounter a rogue canyon and miss our campsite. And that was one thing we originally were going to do. We said, fuck it, let's do a straight line to our campsite. And we noticed canyons spreading out all along us. So we can't do that because we might reach a point where we can't go forward anymore.
Jump it.
so we're not gonna jump it, but we understand we had to follow the road all the way through. What we don't realize is that road is 13 miles and we have very little water, and we actually at this point have no food.
Yeah, you may be wondering, I mentioned that we had half a summer sausage, and at this point you're maybe wondering, wait, you had summer sausage, where is that at? I don't know. Dylan, I believe, lost it somewhere.
It was in my backpack. It was on the side, okay, like where you put a water bottle.
It was not there anymore.
Freaking meat market, hiking through the canyons with the summer sausage on the side of your bag.
So this was a very bad experience. As I mentioned in the beginning when I was describing the route, there was this huge sign and it kind of vis up. We didn't want to do the shortcut as the GPS would suggest because, again, we didn't know where we were going. It was getting dark very quickly, and we decided to do the V-shape walk and just go to the sign and then to the fork where it's at and then just go to where our camp is. But we decided to ask people because there were people camping in that canyon. It's like, you know what? We don't have to go through this. Let's ask people. I mean, they'll be nice. I mean, we're in the middle of the desert. It's dark. They'll understand. There were three people.
They were not nice.
No. I asked, there were three people camping. I got three rejections that day.
Wait, what? You were just like, hey, are we headed in the right direction? And they were just
We said, hey, we just came up the canyon. We need to get back to camp. It's a pretty long distance, and the sun's going down. Can you give us a quick ride back? It's like 10 miles. It might take you, you know, maybe 15, 20 minutes. Nope. Every single time. So because all these people said no, we had to walk 13 miles. The sun's going down and we get going. We have absolutely no food. We have basically no water. We run out of water before we get to the end. And do you... I just remember, so I have my headlamp on, and I'm staring at the light on the ground. That's the only thing that's keeping me going. I'm seeing it move along the sand, and I'm just staring at it, thinking, just follow the light, follow it, follow it. It's like, if I follow the light too long, like, maybe I'm dead. I don't know. But how did you two keep yourselves going as we're going for 13 miles through the dark after doing the Slot Canyon?
Carlos?
I mean, at this point, I was, like, after we had started walking the last 13 miles, and it was dark, and it was cold, like, I was just so miserable. I just remember thinking, like, this is the worst, and we still have so long to go. No, I'm in pretty low spirits. Well, what was I going to do, just stop? And
yeah, we can do shit. We can just stop.
It's always an option.
Happened a lot of times.
So I remember the one particular time, and I think this is the first time we tried. We're like, all right, well, we're gonna stop. It's really cold. Let's start a fire. So Jesus tries with his flint and tinder and no dice. He can't get anything to light.
What? You don't understand the amount of, like, dejection in that. Like,
that's like Blue John wanted us to
fail.
Yeah. No matter what.
Like, a flint and steel is one thing that's like, okay, we can't follow the TV shows. But a lighter doesn't work. It's like everything I've ever learned up until this point has failed me. And I'm in the middle of the road in a desert. A car's going to drive by me 20 minutes later and I'm going to be frozen to death in the street.
And there was no wind, by the way. There was, like, nothing interfering. It was just pure coldness.
Like, the conditions you would think were pretty normal, except for the fact that it was just freezing, and we couldn't get the fire going. So we were like, all right, let's mix the fire. Let's just try and huddle really close and see if we can sleep for even just a little bit. So we did that a few times.
A decent amount.
Every time we did it.
First time it was necessity. After that, it was just for fun.
Yeah, it's just Jesus in the middle every time. It's like Jesus is going to supply us with the most heat. Me and Carlos on each side. Sometimes we'd have the rope wrapped around the three of us. Like, the rope is a little bit of insulation.
Kept you guys closer. You couldn't separate, you know?
It's like, well, I'm the bigger guy, so it made sense that I'd be in the middle there on the side and then just kind of use whatever we have. Yeah, so my experience on that thing is that we were just walking. Dylan was ahead of us. I was in the middle. Carlos was in the back. Every time I look back, I see Carlos. He's looking down at the ground. dark, no headlamp, and he's just kind of like wobbling. He's like, all right, he's going to die soon.
We'll eat him first.
It's like, I don't know what to do. I need to keep up myself. Dylan is just looking at the paper and looking at the GPS.
I'm just staring at the light in the GPS, and every 1 to 2 minutes, I'm looking at the GPS again, turning it on, thinking, how far? How far now? But the thing is, we have to turn, so it's not the real distance. But I still keep constantly checking it. And I remember laying on the ground. We laid kind of on the side of the road, so we propped up against where the gutter would be. But it's sand, so it feels very nice to us. And we're all huddled super close. We're freezing because we were dressed for the desert. So we're all wearing shorts. Maybe we have long sleeve shirts on, but that's... It's not helpful when it's, 50, 60 degrees.
I think it was like in its 40s, to be
honest. Yeah, yeah. It dropped a bit. So when we're outside, it's the high 90s. When we get to the nighttime, it's, low 40s. So we went from sweating our asses off to huddling as close as we can to share warmth. And it's just not like, this is 13 miles long, and it's not you're walking along the road. We're walking in sand. It's very deep.
Up and down.
Every single step feels like we have to push extra to push through
very
that sand.
Low impact on the joints. you kept your knees.
But it was very miserable. We definitely took... We started this trail at these 13 miles at 8 o'clock. It was the middle of the night. One thing, Dylan and I hate cows. One of the main things.
Yeah. Fuck cows!
Yeah, is that in this dark area, Dylan is flashing around and then just movement. It's like, what the fuck's going on? And we're just dead, dehydrated, hungry. It's like, we just don't want to deal with this shit.
You saw eyes everywhere?
You see the trail?
Yeah, you see the cow's eyes glow in the dark, several feet off the trail. And this is where our hatred from cows came.
Yeah, it's like a lot of eyes.
Freaking perverts, man. No one's flashing them and they're looking.
So we're just walking and walking. And I believe we had like every... 0.25 miles we would take a break.
We eventually settled into a rhythm where I was looking at the GPS, said okay, every 0.25 will stop, because we were taking way too many breaks. It's hard to describe how tired we were. And eventually when we get to the end, it's maybe 6:37 in the morning. It's been very, very close to 24 hours of constant movement, and we get there and it's still a little bit dark. And all we have in our tent are marshmallows and barbecue Lays.
Thank God.
Do you guys remember just going to fucking town on some chips and marshmallows?
We devoured everything. We drank the water that we had left behind unbelievably fast. And we ate everything as if it was the last meal we would ever eat. This is the first thing any of us had eaten in so long. We had just burned off Lord knows how many calories, and we were filling up on marshmallows and potato chips.
And we go to sleep. It's maybe 4 or 5 hours. We sleep a little bit, but we're like in the morning. We want to get the fuck out of there because we are now associating this area with pure pain and suffering. Like when you're looking around at this desert, it's not a desert. It's a torture chamber. So we eat all of this. We sleep for 4 hours and we leave. I will never forget the amount of pain when we stepped out of the Jeep and into a Taco Bell in Price.
we decided that we were going to stop at the first restaurant we see that happened to be a Taco Bell.
Of course.
We ate a shit ton of Taco Bell, and we were all just so sore. We were all in pain. We were still basically just miserable from the day prior.
I can't imagine them... Like working there and watching us limping into the building.
I don't know about you guys, but every time we go to Taco Bell, I'm like, I'm gonna feel rejuvenated.
Like, just wake. I remember waking up in the tent. I tried to move something, like my leg or something, and I'm just in agony. like, what's just going on?
So, Carlos, how would you compare how you felt like that next day to any kind of training you did in the Marines?
So there was only one time in anything that you did in boot camp that was worse.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like you don't want to think of it as in, like, wow, you guys are so hardcore. I can't believe you did that. That's impressive.
I mean, it's important to mention they did it all with one arm.
So, that's not true. But we fucked up a lot. And because of how much we fucked up, we put ourselves through these scenarios. Ultimately, I mean, through the canyon, it's very tough. It's hot. It's the middle of summer. It's not an ideal time to be in Blue John, but just due to a lack of looking ahead, a lack of how are we going to get back to where we started, we destroyed ourselves.
And a few assholes that wouldn't help.
That's true. Yeah. I want to, later, we'll think about other assholes who weren't so bad.
Just think about them, though. They won't talk about it.
Yeah. In this case, so, like, they literally had the power to help us so much. They would have, like, the equivalent of saved us. I don't know. Obviously not our lives. Like, we're still alive. But they would have saved us so much energy. So much misery.
But they got a sweet...
The only part that was really the worst part was the end. Which they easily could have taken, you know. Because they were heading out also. They were just heading in different directions.
Yeah, so yeah.
They were taking, like, a 15-minute detour. I mean, help us out. And if that had happened, the experience would have been fine.
Yeah.
Been okay, we would have just been cannoneering for the entire day. And
success.
Nice people would have given us a ride back to camp. But that's not what happened. It's their fault. Why this experience?
It's them. We had it planned perfectly. They were set there for us, and they fucking left.
I mean, would you be making this podcast at this moment if they would have just...
No. Ride? We'd be talking right now about, like, hey, remember those very nice folks who gave us a ride back?
It was a good time. Yeah. We had a great, good day.
Fucking love.
Yeah. So this is where our Blue John obsession, it really reached ahead to where we thought we can do this. There's some obvious things we need to overcome, like the 13-mile walk, but we can do this. And we became really obsessed with the path. We became obsessed with the Aaron Ralston journey. We had technically done it because we did it all on ourselves. And we had done it, I mean, all the way through without any breaks. But at that point, we wanted to do it as Aaron Ralston had done. Carlos had... Yeah. And luckily... Yeah. With one arm. And luckily, Carlos had gotten us... We were very lucky to bring him through on this particular moment. You've heard a lot of people in past podcasts. I honestly don't know that any of them could have done this except for Carlos. We were very lucky with the group we had at this case. So what I want to go ahead and do is end volume 1 of chapter 5, Blue John Canyon, with just a few lessons learned. Let's go ahead and start with you, Carlos.
Lesson learned. The biggest lesson you'd probably learn is game plan on how to get back to your actual a plan to finish the trail, because finishing the trail might not finish where your camp is.
Yes. So again,
if we had gotten a shuttle or those people would have been nice, then this whole thing would have been fine. It would have been an okay experience. Because we were so unprepared and didn't know how to get back to our actual camp, it made everything 100 times worse. Like, so much worse than it should have been. That's definitely, like, know how to get back to your actual camp once you've finished whatever trail you're doing. Also, don't pack plastic water bottles in your backpack and then throw said backpacks around.
It's true.
You want to pack the glass ones.
No.
Okay. Those are both very good points that we've learned from, and honestly, we didn't really do after that. So both of those we learned in the future. Some of them didn't always work out as planned. We'll get to that later. But Jesus, lessons learned from this trip out.
Lesson learned from this adventure, my fear of being in a canyon began in the dark. I don't want to be in the dark in a canyon ever again.
Yeah.
And as you guys heard in our previous chapters, it was not necessarily the case. So it's very tough in the mind and on the body.
Yeah, I remember back when I was scared of the dark.
Okay. That's true. Being in a slot in the dark is awful. So that's a really good thing to think of, to make sure you're looking at time and that you're not there. For me, lessons learned are pretty similar to Carlos. You want to think about what's in your bag, really. Because in canyoneering, you're going to be throwing it around a lot, depending on the canyon. If it's difficult, that's what's going to have to happen. So is anything in there going to break? If it is, what is it that's going to break? If it's food items, you're probably okay. If it's water, you're probably not okay.
What if it's my good china? Can I bring that along?
Yeah.
I think that'll be okay.
Yeah.
I'll wrap it in some like paper.
I'll make sure to go to the store later, and you can use my plastic bag.
Okay. I think it'll be fine, honestly, but
whatever's in your bag, you want to be cognizant of constantly. You don't want to think of it just as a backpack writ large. But you want to think about the context.
Writ tiny.
Writ tiny. Never heard that.
We're breaking new ground.
And then also, you want to be very careful of the items you have in your bag. For instance, if you have a half of a summer sausage, do not put it in the other water thing on the side of your bag. Anything that you have that's going to keep you alive throughout an ordeal, like, keep that shit buried. You do not want it bouncing out of your bag when you're going up a hill, when you're jumping around a canyon. The fact that that summer sausage, that half we lost out on, would have been huge for our morale. That one thing alone might have made this a much more positive podcast. All I can imagine is I remember us walking in the dark and thinking, like, some fucking rabbit is eating that, and that piece of shit does not deserve it. Like, we're full-ass humans dying, and a little rabbit is eating it, and I've never been so pissed in my life. So, with that, we're going to go ahead and end Chapter 5, Volume 1 of Misadventures. This has been our very first foray into Blue John Canyon. We have Jesus.
Here.
We have Carlos, who was there with us.
Freezing.
Oh my God. All right.
And then we also have Cameron, our world famous commentator.
Yeah. And I just want to, you know, subscribe to their Patreon. If you subscribe, if you pay $1 a month, you're going to get early access. You're going to get show notes. You're going to get the live shows. You're going to get the live stream before anyone else.
This is not an illegal paper, by the way.
I want to point out this doesn't exist.
You're gonna get. If you donate $20 a show per month, you're gonna get to call in.
If you do that for 4 months straight,
yeah. Oh, I mean, we're not gonna give you some asshole the privilege after 1 month.
I also want to make sure that we stick in our sponsors here who have kept us going throughout. So we mentioned earlier Garmin. Thank you for getting us through these canyons. Without Garmin, we would have never made it through.
If you don't use Garmin, you're fucking bitch. Yeah,
that's honestly true. And then we also, Jesus and I specifically, were wearing these long sleeve quick dry shirts from the brand Columbia.
Columbia
is a fantastic brand if you are looking to get through nature in the way you intend. The Columbia is all about comfort. When you're outside, you don't realize you're outside specifically because Columbia is keeping you in their comfort.
You know, yeah, that's the thing. This whole podcast, I've thought, these guys are comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
They're having a good time 100% of the time.
Also, Merrill. We would like to thank Merrill for providing awesome hiking shoes, breathable, comfy, durable.
Yeah, if I'm going to recommend one Merrell shoe, it's going to be the Merrell Moab Ventilator. The very bottom, the Vibram, it's going to go ahead and attach.
Vibram.
Thank you.
That's what's in Wolverine's bones.
It's going to go ahead and attach to any red rock you need. Any hiking you need to do, any climbing, it's going to stick right to the rock.
It's going
to
call your mom and ask how she's doing.
Yeah, and do you know what she's going to say?
It's
she's going to say, I'm doing fantastic because my son, he's safe in these fantastic Merrell shoes.
Honest.
So we're going to go ahead and end our podcast.
Also, okay. I want to recommend for some... I did go on this hike, so I'm not going to keep it hiker. Oxford University Press. I'm trying to order a book from them, and I feel like they're a good business. They keep us, you know, educated. They have high. They're like a stringent company. They keep the standards high, and I am fucking up because I haven't ordered a book yet. And it ends in 15 minutes.
I just want to make a note that my fiance has not made one noise at this whole thing. But the fact that Cameron mentioned Oxford Press, she made a noise back there, which I think really signals that she's super into it.
Yeah. You know, I'm all about education.
Yeah, exactly.
It's important.
So, education, adventure, Garmin. Thank you.
Subscribe to our Patreon.
This has been Misadventures, Chapter 5, Volume 1, The Blue John Canyon Chronicles. Thank you for sticking along this far. Go ahead and like, subscribe, do everything Cameron told you to do earlier.
Subscribe.
Do even more if you want to be a fucking champion.
To the Patreon.
We'll see you in Volume 2.
Three warriors full of the light.